to live righteously.
It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall, and it's episode number 281, a special episode with my friend Robbie. Now, Robbie went to school with my younger brother, which doesn't matter to anyone who's listening here. Robbie and I went to the same singles ward for a while, which also doesn't matter. But Robbie was a witness to that horrific, tragic, I don't even know what to call it, incident that happened in Fallon now just a little over a week ago. Thank you for joining me, Robbie.
Hey, no problem.
I'm sorry that we don't catch up in any other respect, but yeah. But we're just sort of going to this. So you have just recently moved to Fallon, Nevada. Let's pick up there, maybe.
Yeah. So I just moved out here to Fallon. I'm in the Navy. There's an air station out here in Fallon, so I just moved here at the beginning of July.
And the majority of the ward somehow militarily affiliated?
You know, some of them are. Probably the majority are just longtime Fallon resident. Some people, former military, that have come back here. I like to be kind of close to a military base, but probably small amount active military, smaller amount retired, and then just people that have long-time residents here.
One of those places where you sort of know everyone. It's fairly small. Give me an idea of that.
Yeah, so the ward's fairly small, probably between 50 and 75 people. One of the older wards, only, you know, smaller primary, probably about 20 kids, and smaller youth, runs a little older. Long-time resident.
People who, like you say, sort of it's, you know, the Calvert family, they've lived there for forever, that kind of thing.
Right, yeah.
So then talk to me, let's jump right to it. Talk to me about church this last Sunday.
Yeah, so church started off fairly routine. It was a nice sunny day. I got there about 10 minutes ahead of time, sat in the second to last row in the overflow area.
Now is church, I sort of have tried to figure this out because it happened just before 1 o'clock. So is church 1 to 4?
Hold on, sorry.
Oh, you're fine?
I got a, I'm outside here and I got someone backing up here.
Yeah.
Well, it'll go around here so I get better reception. Sorry, can you say the question again?
So church ward is 1 to 4. So you got there about 12:50. Is that, am I timelining this right?
It's kind of an odd time start. It's at 12:30. Okay. It's the start of sacrament.
Okay.
So I got there about 12:20.
Okay. And then I guess just walk me through it as you saw it. You're on the second to back row.
Second to back row. About 5 minutes after the meeting started, I noticed a gentleman come in and sit behind me on the back row in the overflow area, wearing a blue shirt, kind of untucked, kind of just looked a little out of place compared to everyone else. He said hi to the man directly behind me, and services continued. The opening announcements were done. Mm-hmm. About 5 minutes later, I noticed the man suddenly get up and walk out into the foyer.
So when you talk about a blue shirt, is it like a dress shirt, or did he look sort of out of place? Like, you know, sometimes you'll get people who wear like a T-shirt, or they'll wear, you know, a pair of shorts into something to church. He looked like a normal congregant, or something was askew even in the way he looked?
He did. So he had it was a dress shirt, okay. But it was... It wasn't a T-shirt, but it felt like it was just enough, a little off and untucked or unkept that I noticed it. And I probably at the time, I thought, oh, this is probably, you know, a less active member, someone who doesn't come to church all that often, who's returning. And that's kind of what the impression I had initially.
Okay.
As I mentioned, he got up, went to the foyer, sat out in the chair in the foyer, and just kind of watching on the inside, watched on the outside while the sacrament began. Sacrament service continued, finished. There was a children's choir that sang next, a primary children's choir.
Because it's the 24th of July celebration, so the kids get up and do some sort of pioneer number.
Exactly. After that, the first speaker begins. She's about 30 seconds into it when, and I didn't see this part, but the man out in the foyer in the blue shirt came in, pointed a gun at the man in the last row, last pew on the right, mm-hmm. first person there, and started firing.
Just came in, didn't be like, listen, you, or any sort of shouting, just kind of walked in and bum, 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 bum.
Yep, no speaking. I had glanced down at my phone, and then the next thing I heard was one shot. So there was one shot, there was about half a second of space, and then just bang, 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 bang. I can't tell you how many shots, but it was a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until really like the fourth or fifth shot that people realized what was going on. It was just shock, and then they're screaming.
Right.
There's yelling. People jumping on the floor. I dove on the floor.
In your mind, did it register, these are gunshots going on in my ward house, or strange noise to the ground?
Strange noise first, and then once people yelling, screaming, then it registered in my mind, this is a gun, someone's shooting, and I jumped on the ground. From where I was seen, I could see him on the right where he was still firing. Stopped firing about for a few seconds, then walked straight out the building, walked right out into the foyer and out the front doors. Once I saw him leave, and I was sure that he left, I ran over to the victim. I was probably one of the first or one of the second people over to the victim.
Mm-hmm.
And he was not responsive. He was laying on the side. We were able to get him to the ground. Asked for someone to give me something to cut his shirt off to see for the wounds, to see where we could press wounds.
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar? Are you trained with your military training that you knew what you were doing, or was just like, I got to do something and I've seen this, you know, before?
So I actually am a doctor. I'm a doctor here at the Navy base. I work in the aviation medicine department, so mostly with pilots. But yeah, we do go through trauma and battlefield medicine training for gunshots and wounds like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we got the member down on the victim down, removed his shirt. I'm trying to feel for pulses. Right as soon as we got his shirt off, they identified there was no pulse, and we began CPR. While we were doing CPR, I asked for people to bring shirt, actually someone brought the cloth from the sacrament table over to try and press to help stem the bleeding from his wounds.
Sure.
There were a number of gunshot wounds on his front torso, on his body, and two large ones on his neck.
Mm.
We continued CPR. People called for I heard people calling for the ambulance to arrive. It seemed like it took forever, but about 5 to 10 minutes later, the ambulance did arrive, as well as police, and secured the building and got the victim onto a cart and into the ambulance.
When you say secured the building, it was basically no one's allowed to leave?
No one's allowed to leave. No one's allowed to get in. They locked all the doors.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, all the congregants, and I wasn't hearing this. This was going on around me. I was focused on what was going on with the victim, but vaguely hear people, everyone moving to the gym, and that's where the police kept us. Once the victim was in the ambulance, that's when I went over to the cultural hall, to the gym where everyone else was.
Your initial reaction, just strictly based on your training, it was just sort of like without thought, you do this and then you do this?
Yes, yeah. It was identify the wounds and feel for pulses, see where we're at. And it was very apparent that it was pretty grievous injuries.
Scary?
The gunshot, that was scary. That was unexpected. That was scary. At least for me, taking care of the patient, you don't have time to think about being scared.
Mm-hmm.
You just, that's kind of where the training kicks in. You just do it. So that part for me was focused, the time before and the time after. That's where kind of the fear and kind of where you, yeah, that's where that happened.
Now, you were alone at church that particular Sunday.
Correct. My wife and daughter were driving up from California from her mom's house. So she had not yet arrived in time for church.
But certainly there were other families there. It gets done. He gets placed on the gurney and essentially taken to the ambulance. As stories have reported it, it's sort of a special kind of feeling that took place there at the ward. Can you expound on that a bit?
Yeah. So once everyone was in the cultural hall, and I walked back in. From what I was noting, there was a lot of crying, a lot of people consoling each other. They set up chairs, set up tables, people to sit down. They passed out water. But really, for the first 30 minutes to an hour, it was so very somber, people consoling each other. The leadership got together, was talking about what they were doing, what they would like to do, and talking to the police, where the primary president decided to get the kids together to continue a sharing time.
Mm.
So she was able to get supplies from the primary room, bring all the kids in, and they formed a little semicircle in the cultural hall and did sharing time. I think that was probably one of the best things that could have done for the kids, just trying to, you know, keep it normal, keep church sacred, keep the lesson going. And I applaud the teachers that did that, because it certainly wasn't easy.
Was it easy? Not easy. That's not the word I want to use. What was your reaction as you saw sharing time then kind of ensue? Was it peaceful or what are you thinking then in this sort of post time? Undoubtedly, as I see you in my mind, you're covered in the gentleman's blood. You are waiting to speak to police officials and surrounded by your ward family. Like, what's going on in your head?
In my head, directly after it, once things had settled down, like you mentioned, I was covered in the victim's blood. That was difficult to look down on your white shirt and it being there. Not because I'm averse to the sight of blood, but mm-hmm. it just always reminded, you know, every time you would look down, you just remembered what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
There was, you know, having my hands bloodied and been in surgery certainly before, during my training, but, usually you clean off and you're able to, in a way, kind of move on.
Mm-hmm.
For me, there was still kind of that feel and that smell. I could smell the dried blood on me, and that was for me kind of that was on my mind, and that was difficult for me. I ended up washing my hands multiple times, washing my shirt. It still was apparent to me, and I had to ask some of the sisters in the ward to borrow some of their lotion. You know, some hand lotion that had some strong smell to it to help cover the smell. And once that was on, I didn't smell anymore. For me, that was easier. That was for me a moment where I was able to move on a little bit more from that. Seeing the kids there talking, made me happy in the regard that, I saw kids talking and acting more like kids and being in their element and being around kids. And, definitely a hopeful scene to me, which is something I hope is able to continue for them.
At what point did the weight of this whole thing fall on you? Or do you feel like it's even fallen on you yet?
I think it was pretty quick how the weight, when you saw the blood on, you know, in the sacrament, in the chapel, on the seats, the gunshots, the spent round around the area, that was a scene that it just doesn't seem to go together. The chapel and this area of violence, those two things that shouldn't be together, that was a weight that that's where the reality sets in right there.
You said you hadn't been in the ward very long. Did you know the victim very well, if
no,
at all?
No, I didn't know him, unfortunately. I've heard certainly ward members talk about him since, but I did not personally know him, no.
What has the feeling like? I mean, we're talking only at this point a few short days. You know, his service is today, as I understand, or tomorrow. What's the plan with the ward? You know, what is the mood like among the members? I'm sure people have been talking to each other. What is that like?
Yeah. So right after church, once we were finally released by the police, about 3 hours after the event, once all the witness statements had been collected, the stake presidency went around to visit the members, visit all the homes, see how everyone was doing, making sure they were aware about counseling that was available in the area and what resources were available. The next day I think it was Tuesday, the bishopric went around again to visit everyone, make sure everyone was doing okay, again, making them aware what was going on and what resources for counseling were available.
Mm-hmm.
The plan right now for church is we're not going back to our ward building. We're going to a different ward building in the city, and we'll be more relaxed and try to a spiritual sacrament meeting where we will be singing hymns, each person, kind of like a testimony meeting with hymns, where people can go up, select a hymn, and say why they feel a connection to that hymn.
Hmm.
And then us as a ward family are going to sing. And that's the plan right now for Sunday. Don't know if there's going to be any meetings after, but that's what I've been told is the plan, at least for this Sunday.
With an eventual plan of getting back to that building, obviously?
Eventually. As far as I know, there's no immediate plans to get back to our building. But I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, some of that probably has to do with investigation and, you know, and that sort of thing. But then also, too, I mean, some things to be replaced. And certainly,
yeah,
as you mentioned, you know, the smell, the feel, all of those things still very present in that space. That whoever made that decision, that is commendable, both for, you know, not bringing everyone back to that place too early, but also, you know, really seeing the spirit of ministering between both the stake presidency and the bishopric on that local level, saying, let's make sure everybody's okay.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I think this is happy with the how the meeting's planning to go here on Sunday. I initially wasn't kind of debating with my wife whether we were going to go to church this Sunday.
Hmm.
Not again for, you know, for any other reasons other than I didn't want to be a testimony meeting where people were, again, would share their testimonies about the traumatic experience. For me, that would be too traumatizing.
Right. Let's dredge this up now again just 1 week later. No, that's not, I don't feel like that's great.
Yeah, so that, I'm glad we're not doing that. And I was kind of worried that would be the mm-hmm. case. And I'm hoping that's not the case. It doesn't seem like that's going to be the case on Sunday, but rather we're going to sing hymns together, bring the spirit together. People are going to share why they want to sing this hymn. And hopefully the mood will be, you know, I'm sure it'll be somber, but also one that we can come together. I think that was a good choice.
A couple other questions about that. Your wife obviously not being there, were you able to get word to her saying, hey, so you may hear about this, or did she try and make contact with you first?
She ended up, she was driving in Western California in an area that didn't have any reception for about 2 hours.
Mm.
So she had a delay in finding out. And I made sure to text her saying, hey, something happened, pull over. When you get this text message, call me and we'll talk about it.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah.
That is a loaded text message, Robbie.
Yeah, maybe not the best one.
But, no, but I guess, I guess better than, hey, there was a shooting, you know, and then frantic. It's like, no, I think that's commendable in the way to be like, you know what, we need to talk. I need you to know that I'm fine, but you need to pull over and call me. And then what was her reaction?
Shock. I mean, that's just, she's like, what? Like, yeah, there was a shooting here at the church. We hadn't yet that time knew that the victim had died.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't find that out till a few hours, till just before we were released. But I was telling her she was hurt really bad. It was really bad.
Mm.
And so she was shocked. And in a way, it's kind of been hard for her because she's been trying to help and relate to our ward, but you know, she wasn't there. So in a way, like the shared experience and knowing what people are going through, it's harder to do when you're not there.
Mm-hmm. Has the experience been spiritual at all to you?
Maybe it will be. Right now, for me at least, I haven't been able to come out with any spiritual feelings about it yet. For me, it's mostly, I guess, sad. Felt betrayed in a way. Betrayed in that, you know, I came here to worship and to feel peace, and I was feeling it. I debated earlier going to church that day. It's something my wife and I do, and so when my wife and daughter aren't there, I thought, hey, there's other things that I can do. I can clean the deck. I can get, you know, we moved into a new house. There's a lot of things I need to do to get ready for my wife to come home today.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like I made the choice. I'm like, no, I need to go to church. I need to have that spiritual aspect in my life. And then for something like this to happen, I felt like I was betrayed in hoping to feel something spiritual and instead being thrown right into the ugliness of this world.
And especially
especially
in your situation where, and you'll pardon the horrible pun, but the hands-on horribleness. I think it's to be commended that you would, and like you said, it's not a choice that you made. It's just the natural reaction of who you are and what you do that you just jumped in. But I think it's to be commended, and I hope that that you arrive at that place being able to see, you know what, there might have been every reason why, you know, you felt that calling or that feeling to go that day when otherwise you could have not. But
yeah,
you know, your experience, your training and those things sort of brought you there to be in that experience. I can't even imagine any of it. The vulnerability which you speak of with now, you know, worshiping at all, but at some point going back to that building and never having that memory scrubbed from your mind, right? It will always be there. It can be 30 years from now or it can be next week, and it will always be that is where this incident took place.
Yeah, yeah. It will.
It's an amazing and I don't know, like you say, sort of betraying story that this person took this place of peace from you and from so many that day. But you know, certainly there is that aspect that, you know, that Christ stands for peace, or that, you know, that those things can be restored. But you know, for the time being, as you guys all look to heal, I know that I speak for many who whose hearts and whose minds and whose spirits, as cheesy as that may sound, kind of go out to you and to others for just being like, you know what, you know, every day at a time, every single day, just, you know, a little bit more healing, more understanding, and just to continue to do it, because it's,
And it has been great to hear people, you know, when I've talked about it on Facebook, when I've talked about it to other people, to hear people reaching out and expressing their condolences and expressing their feelings on it. It is helpful in a way, because you do know that, you know, this thing is not typical. It's not, it's so atypical that people are, you know, it shocks everyone that hears about it. It's, in a way, it's hopeful, I suppose, that it's shocking to us still, that even in a world that we do have this violence, it's still shocking and when it happens. And that's, in a way, I guess, a good thing that it is, that there are still, most people still would be shocked and dismayed and horrified to see someone die. Mm-hmm. In front of them. And maybe, like you said, I do have faith that eventually there will be some healing that comes from it. But for me, at least the way that I've been dealing with the trauma has been, in a way, kind of the same way I deal with it clinically, is to treat it as as emotionless as possible. That's kind of been the way I've been dealing with it now, is saying this individual, this perpetrator, this victim, this happened, but not so much feeling the emotion of it. And that's at least where I'm at right now.
Right.
And hopefully, maybe it will be better in the future, but that's at least where I'm at right now.
Two questions, and then I'll let you back to your day. Number mm-hmm. one is there anything that you'll take from this experience and change moving forward, or something that you would either as a warning or as a, you know what, if I could tell the whole world this thing, do you have a this thing that you would share?
Sure. I guess for me, what would I change? I don't think there's anything
certainly myself. Not. You can't go back in time. That's not what I'm asking, I guess. Sure. Is there anything as you look to worship in the house of the Lord in the future that scares you, or that you will change because now of this knowledge that you have, that things like this can happen?
And I understand what you're saying. I'm hoping not to change anything. I'm hoping things can go back the way we are and we don't have to change anything. I'm hoping that me and my fellow war members can feel safe, that people don't feel like they need to resort to arming themselves all the time, or to, you know, that they feel that their personal safety is threatened everywhere they go. That's, for me at least, that's a horrible feeling to have. I probably won't be able to go back to thinking that there's no way this could ever happen, because obviously it did.
Right.
But I want to go back to at least having faith that it won't happen, that I can go and worship on Sunday and not feel threatened, like I have every day before last week.
And then my last question is, you mentioned the service that will take place on Sunday. Is there a way that we could follow up with you?
Yeah, I'd be happy to talk.
At this point in the show, I would normally share commercials with you, and that just didn't feel right. I wanted to take a second and thank every one of you for the now 7.5 years that the Cultural Hall has been around. Whether you interact with us in social media, or you send us emails, or maybe you just have us as your little secret obsession on your phone or iPod or whatever, thank you so much. And want to let you know that we pride ourselves on having this be a community and a place where hard discussions are had, where we talk about all the things Mormon, and that we appreciate everything that you are in that community, because obviously without you, there is no Cultural Hall, there is no Back Row. So for all the great years we've had and for all the great years to come, thanks for saving a seat for us on the Back Row. Time now here in the second block of the Cultural Hall, and we're chatting with Robbie, and we, in a matter of being transparent, we spoke, I think it was on Friday, so now it's been a couple days, and now we are post-church that first Sunday after the shooting that happened last Sunday out in Fallon, and as you mentioned, they were going to do sort of a different kind of service, so I'll let you pick up and tell what your experience was like today.
Sure. We found out around Tuesday that the ward council had got together and decided that for church this Sunday, we were going to have a testimony meeting, but testimony through music.
Yeah, because you were concerned, you had some concerns that it would be a little odd if it was just a regular testimony meeting, or like a, you know, sort of a story-mony or fear-mony or something like that.
Right, yeah. I didn't feel like that was something that would be helpful, I guess, at this time for a lot of people. So I was kind of worried. I was kind of debating whether or not I wanted to go to church, or if I wanted to take a week or two off after the incident. But I felt that this was a good choice initially when I heard about it, which made me interested to go. I was interested to see how many people else would go. And the church ended up being really full today, more than I'd seen the previous two times I'd been.
Do you, Do you think that was out of curiosity as to people attending saying, hey, you know what, I wonder what this is going to be like? Or what do you lend that to?
So it's hard for me to say because, I'm newer in the ward. This is only my third time attending. I can't say, you know, if there are people attending now that wouldn't be attending, or if there are people maybe for other wards that wanted to come and show their support. I can't speak to that.
Uh-huh.
Just know in general, a lot of people were there. So a lot of people didn't seem to stay away. The meeting had the stake presidency there, and as well as the temple president the mission president from our area also attended it.
And is that technically the Vegas mission? What mission is that?
Reno.
Okay.
Yeah, we're about an hour east of Reno.
I guess I didn't know there was a Reno mission. As I'm speaking out loud, I was like, I bet Vegas mission is all of Nevada, but it makes sense.
And maybe it is. You know, to be honest, I might be wrong about that. I'm pretty new to the area, so it could be. I'm not sure what the mission sizes are, but I'm pretty sure it's just the North Nevada Reno area.
Okay.
As its own mission. We had a sacrament meeting. It was all pretty routine, and then Bishop got up and spoke and said, I'd like to start with picking a song. This is how we're going to do it. Come up and you can share maybe a few words, why you want to pick this song, what it means to you, and we'll sing it. And kind of gave a time limit. We had about an hour and 15 minutes for the first sacrament meeting, so about 45 minutes or so for singing hymns. We got through. So people would come up. They would share a few words like this. You know, I heard this hymn on my mission. I've loved it ever since. Or this hymn has helped me through a lot of hard times. And I've thought about this last week. And it wasn't any. You know, there weren't any themes. I guess we didn't pick very. Not all songs were very somber. Some were, you know, very euphoric. Some were more of the upbeat hymns. Mm-hmm. Some were more of the faithful. I guess songs that declarations of faith. It was a good variety. So there wasn't really any type of thing that stood out in people's choice of hymns. We did usually only sing about two verses on each hymn to get through more.
Sure, to allow more people the opportunity.
Exactly. But all in all, the meeting, I think, went really well. There were people tearful. For me, personally, the first couple hymns, I felt pretty emotional being back there.
When you say...
It wasn't the same building. This was a different building, by the way. Yeah,
you mentioned... So it's not even the same building, but when you say emotional, like, was it like... can you dive into that a little more?
Yeah, so for me, choking up, hard for me to sing the words.
Was it because of your gratitude that you're able to still be alive? Or like what was it that was making you choked up?
I guess for me it was a feeling of peace and the feeling, I guess spiritual feeling, that the uplifting feeling that I guess I felt I didn't, that I was feeling last Sunday before the incident, that again I'm feeling again today, that I probably haven't really felt between now, that point and now. So for me, it was a big part of spiritual healing for me. Being back there, singing the hymns and feeling that again. So that was for me that emotional feeling, choking up, feeling hard to sing. But then through the rest of the songs, I felt great. It was a really great meeting. And no one really even mentioned the incident.
Interesting.
I'm sure it was on everyone's mind,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't really mentioned explicitly during the sacrament meeting and during that testimony.
Now, pick up just on a couple of things. The funeral for the victim has mm-hmm. occurred. Did anyone
yes.
speak any more about that, or him, or the type of person, or
not during the sacrament meeting? Really, like I mentioned, nothing seemed to be explicitly mentioned about the incident or the victim. Later after sacrament meeting, the other 45 minutes of the allotted time we had for church
mm-hmm.
Was spent in the cultural hall, where we did have a guest from LDS Family Services,
okay.
a counselor who came and kind of and spoke to us about what kind of grief or what kind of thoughts, what kind of things people might be going through and how to deal with that.
Interesting.
I just find it interesting. It was, you know, I've seen therapy sessions before. I've been in therapy sessions before. And it's hard to, I guess, address. And group therapy is kind of hard, especially when it's a room full of, you know, 100, probably over 100 people
uh-huh.
On a microphone. So in a way, the way that the counselor chose to do it was to share, hey, this is where some thoughts you might have, you know, you might be feeling guilty, wonder if there's anything you could have done differently, you know, wondering, you know, why does God let this happen? And his answers were very faith-driven, scriptural example of finding strength to overcome challenges. And it seemed, from that perspective, it fit in very nicely with Sunday. For me personally, I thought the first half of the sacrament meeting, the singing, the hymns, that for me was very spiritual healing, more so than talking to the counselor. But that was just me.
Relate for me, kind of secondhand, obviously. Your wife was not there during the incident. She was coming in from out of town. I'm assuming that she was there with you today.
Yes, she was. with.
What has she said since you got out of church post experience? What are kind of her takeaways or what are her feelings about it?
My wife, I guess for me, has been really concerned this week, just kind of checking in, making sure I'm doing okay. She's felt a little bit on the outside this whole week with the rest of the ward members. You know, she wasn't there. She doesn't really know. It's hard. You know, it's hard to if you weren't there. How do you say, you can't say to someone, oh, I know what you're going through. I know how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
That for her has been kind of difficult. She was very supportive in singing. She enjoyed that meeting. For the counselor at the end, I guess for her also, since she, again, hadn't gone through it, that was maybe not as helpful to her. But afterwards, when we got home, we did talk about how much we liked the music and how that was a good choice. Even though it didn't explicitly address the incident that happened, it was a good way to heal and to bring the spirit back into our ward.
One of the things that I love about it, both the counselor from LDS Family Services and the singing and bearing of testimony, is that it's out of the ordinary, right? The ward, the leadership, the however it is saying, all right, we're not going to be so dogmatic about our church experience to just, okay, we're just going to fortitude on and press on like nothing, you know, nothing happened and so-and-so's teaching a lesson, but rather paid, even though not in mentioning of the incident, you said, you know, not too much, everyone was certainly thinking about it, but no one really mentioned it, but paid mm-hmm. sort of that that homage or that or took that break from the dogma and was like, you know what, we're going to worship this way today, and music can be really healing, as you've kind of shared, which I appreciate for sure.
Yeah, and I feel a thought that came to me during the meeting too is, you know, when you're singing and you're hearing those words, they mean different things to different people, and they can touch different people in different ways. In a lot of ways that maybe sermons or words can't. So I think that was, yeah, I think some of the hymns that we sang touched me in different ways that maybe wouldn't touch the same person hearing it.
I guess sort of in just a last question, well, I've got a couple other questions I'll ask you because we ask everyone who steps in the cultural hall a few questions, but one question that I just have for you is, how are you doing?
You know, I'm losing my voice a little bit, sorry.
You're fine.
So I've been doing pretty good.
All things considered, obviously.
All things considered. I found my way to deal with it. I haven't had, you know, I've been trying to make sure that I'm, and checking with my wife, make sure I'm doing okay. I've been all right.
Yeah.
So the ward, people have been checking in. I feel great, as can be expected.
Yeah. I have three questions that I ask everyone that steps into the cultural hall, and because you've done just that, I want to ask those of you just quickly. First of all, do you in fact have a calling, and if so, what is it?
I do not have a calling yet. I was probably going to get one last week. I was meeting with the bishop after the meeting, but that did not occur. And
yeah.
Still has not.
Okay.
Been indefinitely postponed.
If you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make one up, what would you pick?
You know, my wife and I, our last calling was tag team primary instructors.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. I'd never been in the primary before, and it was a blast.
How old were the kids you taught?
They were 6 and 7, just getting ready for baptism. It was a fantastic age group.
Cool. You can have it. I can't stand those kids. I'm just teasing. sort of kidding. And then two more questions. If people, is there a need, if people are listening to this and they want to reach out and be able to help actually do some good to the saints there in Fallon, is everything pretty well taken care of, or is there a Kickstarter or a GoFundMe or a something that people could reach out and help?
Yes, there is a GoFundMe account set up for the victim's family,
mm-hmm.
The Miller family,
okay.
M-I-L-L-E-R. They do have a GoFundMe account to help pay for any expenses for his family. I do know his wife is going through some health issues right now. I think that's also the other side for the GoFundMe, to help with her ongoing medical expenses.
Okay. So I'll provide a link with this episode at theculturalhall.com. People can just click on that and then find their way through. And if you feel like donating, I hope you'll do that. The last question that we have for you, Robbie, is, what is your favorite part of your faith?
So my favorite part of my faith, so I like that I am asked to serve in ways that I am uncomfortable with. I'm asked in every calling, everything I've done, going on a mission, it's all been doing things that I am uncomfortable with and things that I don't think I'm good at.
Hmm.
And I feel that being challenged makes me a better person. It makes me a stronger person. And this is something that I don't think I would get any other way in my life. And that's why that's a big part of my faith.
Well, Robbie, I hope that the next time we talk, it is under no means these circumstances, and take care of you and your family in that little town. And if there's anything that we can do, those that are listening anywhere else besides obviously that GoFundMe, which we discussed, I hope you'll reach out and let us know how we can help. Okay?
All right. Thanks.
All right.
No problem.
Thank you, sir. We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row. We read.